Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is creating sacred space. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Today, we are going to explore how we can create sacred space and sanctuary, and how these have been created and used throughout time. Our first sanctuary, of course, is that fathomless space inside the womb as we first come into our human beingness. And then from there, our sanctuary becomes our body as our consciousness enters into form. And moving even further out, our planet, the Earth, is a sanctuary for our lives and for all of life. Floating amidst the inhospitable conditions of outer space. And then leaving outer space and moving into another type of space, in a way, cyberspace can be a sacred space. So as I speak with you here today, I'm in my sanctuary, my healing room, and I have a beautiful view of the mountain and the sky. And here we are together, connecting on a deep level, as if we were in each other's company. You know, I find that when I first meet someone who has listened to my radio show, I feel such a deep connection, as if we already know each other. I have opened and shared my heart with you, and you have helped me to feel so supported and loved, and we have co-created this sacred space together where we resonate with each other. It brings us together as friends. It really fills our hearts and each other's hearts with love.
Josephine, on that note, we've had a wonderful message from Mary from Melbourne in Australia, and she writes as follows. Dear Josephine and Tony, I can't thank you enough for enriching my life with your insights and stories and the sharing of all that wisdom. I look forward to many more shows with you. Much love to both of you, Mary.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Thank you, Mary. Well, as you know, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift from my mentor and teacher, Jana Massey, and it goes like this, and I ask you all to join in with it and make this agreement. We can do it together. Together we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you, everyone.
We also received a message from Barbara from San Luis Obispo, and she writes, Hi, Josephine and Frank. Listened to your first show on sanctuary and loved it. The memories of my sanctuaries from age 8 give me so much pleasure, and I felt special love from me to me as I reflected on them. Love, Barbara. Thank you so much for that message, Barbara.
Yes, that's really beautiful. You know, our sanctuaries and sacred places open us up to our inner guidance, and they really help us to glean the wisdom of our lives. We all need a place of solitude where we can be alone with our thoughts, where we can grieve and work on growing our soul, where we can settle down and find inner peace and be alone. Sanctuaries offer us the time and place needed to interpret our dreams, to meditate, and to pray, and this puts us in touch with our right brain, the creative and interconnected part of ourselves. And it's from that right brain space that we can engage our feeling sense and access our psychic ability. Having a personal sanctuary may seem like an insignificant detail, but really it is vastly important in our lives. It's in our sanctuaries that we can learn how to love ourselves and find out who we are. So, Tony, maybe you can show that slide. This is by Kate Robertson, and she's an American writer who's based in Colorado. And she says, Have a mind so quiet that you can hear doves whispering as they rest their wings in the rafters of your silent sanctuary.
Mm.
Isn't that nice?
Mm.
And, of course, we do have very formal sanctuaries that we are aware of, especially culturally. There's the church where refugees could claim sanctuary and perhaps be granted protection by the clergy. And then there's also communal shrines that we find in a lot of Asian cultures and also family sanctuaries in Asian homes. There was a home that I visited not too long ago that had a very beautiful sanctuary. It was located right in the center part of the home, the center back. So like if you would come in the front door, you'd go to a little bit to the middle and then to the back part of the house. And it had a cork flooring, and it was completely screened off. It had one of those folding screens that allows it to, you know, where you can have the like open part of the screen so that it's like an open door, or close it so that it was a closed sanctuary. And they had zafus, or little sitting pillows for meditation, on the floor, and a little low table with a vase of flowers. And there was a view right out the window. There's a sliding glass door that led out to the garden, so you could look out to the garden while you're sitting there. And it was a wonderful addition to that home for any of the family members to use any time they felt the need for a little peace and quiet, or just a little rest, or a little time apart. And I think that's such a wise idea, such a great thing to have. And then we can also have really informal sanctuaries. For instance, the car, you know, can be a really informal sanctuary. Sometimes I'll go out and sit parked out front, and it's quiet and it's warm, and it's a place where I can think, or if I really need to focus in on something, I can go out there and just really focus in. So that's sort of an informal sanctuary that I'll sometimes use. And I've known other people who've used the car as the sanctuary, because maybe the house is too full and there's too much commotion and there's a lot of family members running around. So, you know, all right, I'm going out to the car. I'm going to sit out there. And people sort of know, and they learn, and they begin to respect that place as a place where you want to be undisturbed. And so, you know, dashboards can have lovely little altars. There's many times I've seen dashboards of cars that have feathers and sand dollars from the beach, or maybe a beautiful sprig of a, you know, tree branch or something in there. And, you know, you can also keep like a little traveling altar like we spoke about last week in the altar, in a little can or a bag in there, and then you can pull it out and set it up, and then you've got a little sanctuary right out there. Then, of course, my favorite is places out in nature, and perhaps, Tony, you can show that next slide there.
Certainly, Josephine.
Thank you. So this is a quote that is often attributed to Mary Oliver, and I'm not sure who the original author is. I probably very well could have been her. She's such an amazing poet, one of my very, very favorites. And this slide says, "Under a grandmother oak, I plant my feet in cool, dark earth and pray." Nothing more simple than that for a sanctuary, and nothing more perfect, perhaps, you know, to just go outside and take your shoes off and wiggle your feet into the dirt and stand there under an oak tree and just really take it all in.
That's really nice. Josephine, we've had a message, a question come in.
Oh, good.
Which kind of connects to that, so I thought perhaps I'd share it with you now.
Yes, sounds great.
Well, they're two together, and they're from Bev, and one is, does the word alter, A-R, come from the word alter, E-R, as in alter consciousness?
Oh.
And the one that goes with it is, can you create an alter in the forest?
Oh, yeah, I should say so. Oh, those are beautiful questions, Dev. So, you know, I don't know the root word of the two words alter and alter, but I love your spin on it. That is a really great idea.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And you know, there probably is a root like ALT that is in our language from, you know, either Roman or Greek or something like that, or Latin. And what a great idea to alter consciousness at the altar. Beautiful, good thought. And then the second part was, can you create an altar in the forest?
Well, yes.
I think absolutely. You know, for one, just being in the forest, you're practically in an altar. And then I have a really dear friend who is very, very creative, and she sometimes does altars at the Unitarian Church here locally, and she's brought in, you know, beautiful fallen logs and bits of little moss that are growing in soil, and and carefully potted them around, you know, onto the logs. And then, of course, she's so conscientious, she returned them back to nature where she found them afterwards. But she brought a forest altar into the sanctuary of the Unitarian Church. And similarly, when she has her annual Midsummer Night's Eve party, she creates beautiful altars in her front yard there, which is a forest. It's an oak forest. And so absolutely, indefinitely, you can. And it can be as simple as just, you know, lying down a pine bough or gathering some flowers and placing them at the base of the tree, or just standing and acknowledging and enjoying nature. So absolutely, Dev, I would say yes, of course, and what a wonderful thing to do. And whether you leave it there after you're done, if it's made of natural things, and that, I think, would be fine, or if you take it and put it back to where you found it, it's all up to you. But that's a great idea. Thanks so much for writing in with that.
That's really good.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we can do in our sanctuary is we can receive messages. And I was just sort of browsing around on the Internet the other day, and I found this young female scholar, J.D. Strobe, who had found a little temporary sanctuary, which she referred to as a haven, on a patio. And it was all cement with walls that were made out of concrete. And she said, as I turned to leave, I looked down. Beside my foot, a sprout of greenery was clawing its way through the pristine nothingness to begin anew. It was later that I realized my haven had sent me a message, and it had shown me that nothing is ever completely lost unless you cease searching. And this is the type of message that we can get when we go out and open ourselves up to our receptive self. And this is why we need sanctuary. It helps us to come to ease and to find our way in life. It can be a great source of direction and guidance. And it can also calm us and help us to find our grace.
You know, Josephine, I haven't yet managed to make a sanctuary for myself in our home, although sometimes I can go out into the backyard and sit under the oak tree. But, so I kind of like to go to the pier at Adler Beach, but I have to get there very early, or otherwise there'll be lots of people there and they make noise. But it is a very special spot for me, so I suppose that does count as a sanctuary of sorts. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've had many epiphanies there. You know, sometimes the solution to a problem will just occur to me as I'm standing there gazing at the water. And I find it's an ideal place for me if I have to make a decision about something, that I'm likely to make the best decision if I go there rather than if I'm just, say, driving the car or walking around or busying myself in the kitchen or whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, that's great, Tony. And, you know, I think that's very much a part of our natural human beingness. After all, people from around the world through all time have, you know, gone to the shores of lakes and rivers, or they've gone and found reflecting pools, you know, some sort of a deep, quiet, still water somewhere, where you can just gaze into the water and get ideas and impressions. That's what's known as scrying, S-C-R-Y-I-N-G. It's a psychic skill that is like looking into a crystal ball or something like that. And the same thing can happen when we gaze into a pool of water. And just like you're gazing out over the ocean, you know, there's that same sort of a feeling. Only with the scrying, you're actually sort of like seeing images or shapes like you do when you gaze into a crystal ball or seeing images in the water. But it's the same sort of mind state. It puts us in an altered brainwave pattern. And then, of course, people have also gone to mountaintops, you know, mountain climbers, of course, they're on a real agenda. But there is something that is very pivotal about that experience. And our young nephew recently climbed to the top of a very high peak and was up there at dawn and just found himself in absolute bliss as he was gazing around at his surroundings, and it was a life-changing event for him. And now he regularly goes and climbs mm-hmm. mountains because it's just such a deep place to find ourselves in. And then as well, throughout much time, and we've heard of this quite frequently with our American First Nations peoples, the Vision Quest is a beautiful way for us to... And though that is a part of that tradition, we can do something similar in our own way. We can set ourselves time apart. We can take time to really cleanse ourselves with our diet and move into a place in our consciousness where we are really seeking deeply. And these are the moments that shape our lives. And I can remember, and also, too, there are these beautiful deep caves that show evidence of people having gone on really deep vision quests and searching. On my altar, I have an image that I clipped out of a magazine years ago of a mother goddess, and she's known as the goddess of Lausel, L-A-U-S-S-E-L, and she's approximately 30,000 years old. And she's got beautiful full breasts and belly and hips and legs, and she's holding a crescent moon-shaped bison horn aloft in her hand. And her face is turned towards that crescent horn, which has 13 marks on it, most likely representing the 13 moons of a lunar year, and also most likely the 13 opportunities for pregnancy that a woman has each year. And her other hand is on her womb, so that sort of makes me realize that in her time, 30,000 years ago, they were definitely connected in with that female cycle and the cycle mm-hmm. of the moon and the cycle of the year.
And goddess worship was probably the dominant religious practice.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's lots of other examples of cave sanctuaries, like the Cave of Lascaux in France. It's a Paleolithic cave, and there are paintings in there that were made by people 20,000 years ago. And it has a very long crawl space where I believe that it was a couple of teenage boys found it. They crawled in this long, long dark space. And, you know, I went spelunking.
Such a funny name.
It is a funny name, isn't it? I went spelunking in Jewel Cave when I was in my early 20s with some friends. And there was a part of the cave that they called the brain drain. And it was only about 6 or 10 feet long, but it was about as big, the hole that you could crawl through was set on a horizontal, and it was about as big as a person's body is. And we just kind of had to worm our ways through this little narrow area, and it was in graphite rock, so that kind of helped it to be slippery, because graphite is the stuff that's inside of pencils, and the nature of that rock is that the various little tiny flakes of the rock will slide easily over each other. So when we came out, we were all covered with pencil lead. But and it had a little dip. It went up, and then it went down, and then it went up again. So you had to do this kind of like little caterpillar move. And I thought, my goodness, you know, to have wiggled their way 30 feet, you know, 20,000 years ago when they were doing the art in those caves, that's a real intense transition,
mm-hmm.
very like being born, very reminiscent of the birth canal. And, of course, when we go through experiences like this where we take ourselves apart and go on vision quests or go and find sanctuary, we are being born to a new aspect of ourselves.
I've seen this, you know, photographs of the Lascaux artwork on the wall, so the most stunning horses.
Yeah,
really something special.
And same with that, I think they call it the Chevaux Pont d'Arc cave, which was I think Werner Herzog made a movie of it called The Cave of Forgotten Dreams
mm-hmm.
in 2010. Really amazing, you know, artistic evidence of time spent reflecting. Yeah.
Sorry?
And you wrote a lot about various sanctuaries and things in your book and pilgrimages.
Oh, I did, yes,
in the
Sacred Sites Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I learned a great deal in doing that. And it is evident that throughout the world, throughout time, people have found sacred spots to do their inner spiritual work and a place to have really powerful personal and mystical experiences. Yeah, and several come to mind. There's Crater Lake up in Oregon, that beautifully blue, still lake.
Oh, yeah.
Where the local indigenous people go on vision quests. Maybe some of our listeners have visited there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Mount Fuji in Japan, which is sacred to followers of the Shinto religion, and they worship nature. There's Mount Kailash in Tibet, and for Hindus, Mount Kailash is an embodiment of Shiva. And then there's a lake next to it called Lake Manasarowar, if I pronounce that correctly, who is thought to represent Parvati, and they're side by side. And that mountain is deemed to be too sacred for anyone actually to climb it. And so the pilgrims actually walk around the foot of the mountain when they go on pilgrimages.
Wow.
And thinking of that, I'm thinking now of the Catahoota Rocks in Australia.
Oh.
And the local Anangu people go on walkabouts. I think people have probably heard about the Dreamtime religious tradition. And then they would follow the paths that the ancestral beings walked from one sacred spot to another. And, for example, they might go from Uluru, which people know as Ayers Rock, to the Catahoota Rocks. And then when they would arrive, they would sing and dance, and thereby honoring the ancestors. And then they would receive blessings. And I think, like the caves in France, it's a very, very ancient tradition. I mean, it's possibly 30,000 years people have been, you know, making those walks.
Wow.
And then maybe one final one. I'm thinking of the Bighorn Medicine Wheel in Wyoming,
oh, yes,
which is sacred to the Native American Crow tribe.
Yeah, wow.
But there's so many in all different cultures, you know, throughout the world.
Yes, isn't it really something? And it's such, it is a deep, deep part of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It goes way, way back. So it's nice for us to allow ourselves to revisit that today. And even if it's just stepping out into the backyard or going to the park, you know, the park bench can be a perfect sanctuary, a beautiful place to just enjoy the nature. A lot of people go out and play golf. That's a great sanctuary, too, you know, and just go out and spend time out in nature. Beautiful. Yeah, when Frank and I went to New Zealand some years ago, it was, you know, we don't do that much travel, but we did sort of save up our pennies, and we went to New Zealand, and we went for a nice long time. We went for a month, and it was extraordinary. It was so beautiful there, and I was so pleasantly surprised to find out how strong my psychic ability was there. And I don't know if it's because they drive on the left side of the road, which could very well be, because that's a little more, you know, the right-hand path is a little more dominant for the left brain, and the left-hand path is a little more open and accepting of the right brain, which is our more creative and psychic part of ourselves. And also, too, they honor the queen, which is a more feminine aspect, which is more receptive and yin and a little more inclined towards psychic ability, as opposed to that more hierarchical male structure that we're so familiar with in our cultures and in our society. But in any case, I was really pleasantly pleased to find that I kept having all of these very, very profound psychic experiences, things that were, you know, really useful, like the you know, engaging the feeling sense, which, of course, we have our five senses that we are all so connected in with. We've got, of course, seeing, which is our most dominant sense, and then the sense of smell, and then the sense of taste, and then the sense of hearing, and then the sense of touch. But we don't often talk about that sixth sense, which is the feeling sense, the gut feeling that we get. And, in fact, we often refer to our psychic ability as our sixth sense. And we all have it. We all know when something feels good or when something feels bad. But we're so often taught to ignore that. You know, sit still, be quiet, you know, whatever it is, right from childhood on up. And so that feeling sense was very, very strong for me in New Zealand. And there would be a time where we'd be about to head on, turn right on a road, and I would just say, ooh, no, wait a minute, that doesn't feel right, you know, and so Frank, of course, you know, he's used to living with a psychic, and he's very sensitive himself and has a good, strong feeling sense, an extremely well-developed feeling sense. And so we'd pull over and think about it for a second and then decide a different way to go and go that way. And then later that night on the news, we'd hear that a hurricane had struck on that road or something like that. So it was really quite extraordinary. And one of the experiences that I had was about a sanctuary in nature in New Zealand. We had gone to go see these beautiful geothermal pools, and they were these rich areas of bubbling hot mud that where the heat from the center of the earth had come up with the spring, and these areas where the soil was deep and clay-filled, like a clay, and different colors of clay, red clays and black clays and gray clays and green clays. And there were these areas where they had a boardwalk and sometimes these little sort of like raised platforms that you could take the stairs up to go and look down into these bubbling pots of natural geothermal energy coming up and moving the clay and the water in that little pot in a beautiful way. And so we were very excited to go. And the day that we went, it happened to have been a very rainy day, and it was drizzling, and the whole place was completely enshrouded in mist. And it was about a mile or two walk around these main areas. It was a national park. And so we got started on the walk, and we went around, and we'd go and look at this bubbling mud pot, but we couldn't see anything because it was just mist. And then we'd go to the next one, and of course, there was more mist there and couldn't see anything. And then we'd go to the next one, and there was more mist there. And Frank is a lighter weight frame than I am, and he was starting to get kind of cold. But I'm Danish, and so I hold my heat pretty well. And we got to the last one, which was this really big one, and I really, really wanted to see it. And it had a viewing platform, and just nobody was there on that day because the weather was just too inclement. And Frank was starting to get cold, and I wanted to wait and see if we could wait for the mist to part to see this one, because this was the multicolored one with the different colors of clay in it. And so I said, well, why don't I stay here, and why don't you go on back to the car and get warm? And our hotel room that we were staying in was very close, and he said, you know, better yet, let me just run back to the hotel and change clothes and get warm, and then I'll come back and collect you, and by then you'll be done. And I thought, oh, that's a great idea. And so he took off, and I went on up the stairs, and I was looking in there, and I thought, oh, gosh, it's pretty, the mist is definitely pretty thick. And then I realized that nature was calling, and so I needed to go excuse myself and find some bushes nearby, and so I did. And, that's part of our contract that we have with the earth. You know, we are, it's a part of that natural life cycle. We are compostable, and we give our bodies to the earth when we die, especially prior to this more recent trend in, embalming and cremation and all of that. But that's the natural thing that we do. We give our bodies to the earth when we die. And we also give our urine and our excrement to the earth. We dig a little hole. And of course, I'm very, very grateful for sanitation in the cities. We do need that, and I really appreciate it. But in the natural rural life, and especially I understand if you're a vegan, if you're eating a purely plant-based diet, that you can just use your manure right on the garden bed, just like we use cow and horse manure. It fertilizes the soil in a beautiful way. So I went ahead and relieved myself. And in a way, you can look at that as giving a gift to the earth. And in that moment, I did look at it that way. I was thinking, let me give of myself to the earth here. And then I, just really acknowledged that that was a part of that cycle. And then I think that sincerity is so much a key of these sorts of things. And I went with great sincerity up to that little viewing platform. And I had recently read The Mists of Avalon by Marion Zimmer Bradley, her novel. And in it, it's a wonderful story about how the priestesses and the women stand in their power. And one of the things that they do to be able to access Avalon is they stand up in the front of the boat, the high priestess does, and she rises her arm up into the air with her eyes closed, and then as she lowers her arm, the mists part before the boat and allow them access to Avalon. And so I thought, that's such an intriguing idea. And then I had also recently read Shakti Woman by Vicki Noble, and in it she speaks about how one of our things that we can do as humans in nature is we can work with the weather and in harmony with the weather. And so we all know about how people can call rain, and this was just a part of that idea of working with the weather. And I think that also Shirley MacLaine had spoken of that when she came back from Peru some years ago in the media, and how she had done some of that working with the weather herself. And I thought, if not me, who, and if not now, when? I just thought, I'm going to give this a try. And nobody was around, so there was nobody to, worry about judgment or what is going on here or who does this person think they are. And I just thought, let me just see if this is something that I can really do. And so I just stood there for a moment, and I raised my arms up, and it was a holy moment. It was a moment of great interconnection and intention and a part of that cycle of life. and me as a part of nature and as a part of the earth. And then I, with my eyes closed, I just dropped my arms down. And when I opened them, opened my eyes, the bubbling mud pot was revealed. And the mists had parted for just a moment. They cleared for just a moment right then. And they were so thick and swirling all around that I think it was probably only maybe a full minute that they held open for me to really get a good look. And then they just came all swirling back in, as thick as before, just pea soup. It was really a wonderful, wonderful moment, and I'll never forget it. It really showed me that we can claim our true power and stand in it. And anyway, then Frank came back, and we went back to the hotel.
Oh, that's a truly amazing story.
It was great.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's reminding me that when you're talking about the Mists of Avalon, I mean, the Isle of Avalon is thought to be Glastonbury Tor, and I used to live in Glastonbury,
oh.
And I used to walk out my front door and see the Tor, and it's another sacred site that people would
yeah.
go to. And it's a very strange one, because it's the Somerset Levels, which are actually very, very flat land. It's actually below sea level, with this amazing, like, hill that just comes out of the land. And it looks so odd. It looks like it has to be, you know, made by humans, but actually it's a naturally occurring Tor.
Wow.
And there's like the remains of a church on it now.
Oh.
And if you look down on the Tor from above, it's a spiral pattern. But
wow.
Because the it's on very flat land below sea level, the mists do actually come in, and it looks like it's an island, which is why they call it the Isle of Avalon, because it looks as if it's just surrounded by water. Well, it has been recently, because there's been a lot of flooding in England. It's really spectacular.
Wow.
And I'm sure some people that are listening today will have been to Glastonbury. It's a really popular sacred site to visit in England. Some people believe it's the entrance to the fairy kingdom.
Well, I certainly did.
there's a beautiful garden at the foot of it called the Chalice Well Garden, and the water that comes through there from this naturally occurring spring has a slightly red color.
Oh.
And some people say that's the blood of Christ, but other people say that's because there's lots of iron nearby.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
But it's a truly spectacular, and it's a sacred garden where people will go to meditate and pray and receive guidance.
And I'm sure back in those goddess worshipping times, they probably felt it was the blood of the mother.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really special place.
So there are also many faces of sanctuary that I'd like to go into just a little bit. For instance, one of my very favorites is lying in bed in the morning.
Oh, yes, I'm a great fan of that.
And, you know, if you have a good boundary for, you know, pets and children, which, of course, we love pets and children, but sometimes it's nice for us to be able to have that time alone, especially if we're trying to catch our dreams and do our dream recall. So last month we talked a lot about how to remember our dreams and how to work with our dreams to gain information and knowledge from them. And that's one of those topics that is forever interesting to us because, well, you know, we all dream, and our dreaming is an amazing part of our beingness as humans here on the earth and for all of life on the earth, all of life dreams. And it's a great way for us to solve our problems. And so to take time alone in the sanctuary of our bed in the morning to work on our dreams is a really great idea. Another common sanctuary is the garden. You know, I know so many of my friends and myself included who love to go out and cultivate and work in the garden. And Frank just did a whole bunch of gardening over the last couple of days. And, you know, you really do find a deep sense of joy and satisfaction and purpose when you're out there digging in the ground and handling the plants because, after all, that is like the truth of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're touching truth, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to do. And plus the repetitive motion, it can kind of be like swimming or walking. Sometimes it's like if we've got a problem on our minds or something, and, you know, you want to just sometimes set the thing down and let the internal computer run and forget about it a little bit. And then while you're out there in that repetitive motion of digging or working or weeding, sometimes the answers can just percolate and just come right up through us. It's like they just rise up from the base level of consciousness and enter into our aware and into our own consciousness and we find the solutions to our problems.
I think that's my dad's sanctuary, actually, the garden. He seems to spend at least a couple of hours every day. And if he hasn't got his own garden, because he's visiting over here at the moment, then he likes to spend some time in somebody else's garden.
Isn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
That's really great. And it keeps you so fit, too, all the bending and stretching and moving and sweating in the sun gets you your good vitamin D on your skin, you know, which is our number one cancer preventer. So it's great to get that, especially that early morning sunshine and that late afternoon. And I like going out into the garden in the morning because the winds are down and, you know, there's just something so fresh and new about it, something I do every day. And, you know, my dad's sanctuary was the garage. He would come down from the office. I could always tell if he had a big problem that was sort of weighing on his mind because he'd open up the garage door and he'd get there, stand at his workbench. And during the course of the many months, he had a big coffee can in there that he would just toss all of his miscellaneous nuts and bolts and screws and things into. But he also had a whole series of little smaller soup cans and other little, you know, and he would sort them into, you know, this is this size nut and this size screw.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, when he had a big problem on his mind, he'd go out there to that workbench and he'd dump that big can out onto the bench, and then he'd just stand there and sort screws for a couple of hours. And when he'd come in from that job, he was always happier and fresher and lighter. I could just see that something had really lifted in him. And I'm sure that that was his own sanctuary, that he really let things just percolate through for him at that time and place. And Frank's sanctuary is his artist studio.
Mm-hmm.
He goes out there and he gets busy, and I see him with his, you know, oh gosh, his big pieces of paper and his drawing pencils and all of that. And he puts on his favorite music and he's just one with the world out there.
Mm.
He'll maybe be painting at one of his beautiful art pieces. And he's, if you go to my website, there's a page for Frank there too. You can see his lovely art that he does. He works with glass. And he'll sometimes get those pinstriping brushes going with the automotive paints and do these lovely long lines on the back of the glass that just shows through so beautifully and looks so nice. It's really something. And when he's out in his studio, I try to really respect that space. I mean, you know, he's not hearing the telephone out there. He's not being interrupted by neighbors popping by. And unless it's something kind of important, I just let him be out there. And he does amazing things and really comes in happy and refreshed and doing great. It's sort of like that chop wood, carry water, which Frank made a beautiful, he made all of our slides, of course. He does every week, and he does such a lovely job. And perhaps you can show that slide for us now, Tony.
There it is.
It's sort of like, you know, the same task, but a different perspective. And this one says, before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water.
Yeah, that really hits a very deep truth. And I've noticed so much in my own life how my attitude to the job that I'm doing is far more important with regard to the amount of satisfaction I get from it than the particular job that I am doing, if I come with the right attitude.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that symptom of enlightenment is more joy and less worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more joy, less worry.
So I'd like to talk now a little bit about some of the things that we can do in our sanctuary aside from meditation and prayer and dream recall. And maybe you can show that next slide then for us, Tony. This is the Know Thyself slide.
Certainly.
And, of course, Know Thyself was written over the ancient city of Delphi in stone over the city gates. And it is one of the primary ways for us to be in the world in a good way, to know who we are, what we're here for. It lets us get along with each other better. It lets us stay true to ourselves. And when we're true to ourselves, we are in our joy. And when we are in our joy and we have less worry, we are becoming more enlightened. So it's a really great thing. And I'd like to begin this discussion on what we can do in our sanctuary with just a little exercise. And last week we did that wonderful exercise of just connecting with yourself, just entering into that moment of beingness for just a moment, of really touching in with who you are. And that's one of our primary ways of, you know, really knowing ourselves, is to just be. And kids do it all the time, and we forget to do it as adults, but it's really worthwhile to spend time doing it because it really increases our creativity And the reason for that, of course, is that it just puts us in our right brain. Just taking a moment to just be who we are. That's the simplest thing to do. And it only takes a second. And then one of the very next basic, simple modes of our beingness is our breath. That is, after all, the first thing that we do when we really come fully into embodying our bodies. When we are born, we take that breath. And so what I'd like to do right now is to just guide us through a little breathing exercise. So go ahead and get in a relaxed and comfortable position, perhaps with your feet nice and solid on the floor, no crossed legs. Oh, pardon my voice. My laryngitis is still giving me a little tiny touch of trouble here. So realizing that we have a left lung and a right lung is a nice thing to start off with thinking about. And then furthermore, our lungs have, there's a bottom to our lungs, which is down low near our abdomen or our low back. Maybe not quite as low as our low back, but it's above the waistline. But still, the lungs do reach down quite low. And then there's the middle area of our lungs, kind of like around the area where a bra strap would be if you're a woman. The bra band, the main band that goes around the torso. And then also there's an upper area to our lungs. And this upper area reaches right up into our shoulders and rises below the, in the front, it rises and extends the clavicle, those collarbones right in the front of the body. So our lungs are actually very large. So there's the right lung and the left lung, and there's the bottom, and then the middle and the top. And if you go ahead and just relax your body for just a moment and then just allow yourself to breathe in and just let yourself be aware that you're feeling both the right and the left simultaneously, hopefully. After one of my injuries, I was knocked askew there and I filled the right one more than the left and sooner than the left, and also it held more air longer than the left. So it took me coming into awareness about that. So just notice your own lungs. See if they're simultaneous when you fill them. And take a breath. Doesn't have to be huge, just nice and easy. And just notice if you're breathing simultaneously. Now take another breath and notice if you're filling each lung, your left and your right lung, with the same volume of air. So like I said, just like we can be right hand dominant, sometimes we can be right lung dominant. And it's easy enough to fix. Our lungs are underneath our under our subconscious control, but they are one of the organs that can also be under our conscious control. As can actually every other organ in the body. The yogis of India have studied this quite extensively, and they can control the flow of blood in their veins and the movement in their intestines, which are normally under subconscious mind control. So if our left lung, say, is not filling as fully as we would like, we can just bring our conscious awareness to that and just let it fill up just a little more. We do this with our intention and then with our muscular control by relaxing the muscles on the left around our lungs. There's these beautiful muscles in between each rib, the intercostal muscles, and sometimes they get a little tight. And one of the ways that we can do this is, so let's say we're sitting in our chair, and we can just bend our upper torso to the side. So if you wanted to open the left lung more and bring in more air to the left lung, you would bend over to the right. Just straight over, maybe drop your arm down a little bit towards the floor. And then fill the lungs with the breath. And you'll notice that the right lung, because it's pinched, because you're being bent over to the right, is not going to be able to take in as much air as the left. Just allow your left lung to fill a little bit, and then come back up to a normal seated position. And then just to be even and fair, let's do it on the other side. So bend over to the left and allow your lungs to fill to the right side a little more. and then come up to the upright position. And one of the things that we're doing here is we're just allowing ourselves to have a little more control. We're taking the driver's seat of our mind just a little bit. You know how our minds are often busy scurrying about and running all over the place? That's a very left brain function. And when we sort of allow ourselves to pick up the reins, as it were, and let our minds become quiet, as they just did as we were paying attention and following along and doing, that's a little more of our just sort of taking a hold of that left brain a little bit. And similarly, we can do that by bending forward and breathing and bending backwards and breathing. We can fill the front and the back side of our lungs. So now we'll go ahead and close this exercise by just taking one more relaxed and easy breath. Not too deep. We don't want to injure ourselves. And just notice the simultaneous, even, top, middle, and bottom filling of your lungs. How was that exercise for you, Tony?
Very nourishing, very refreshing.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, very restful.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do in sanctuary, isn't it? And, you know, that's the sort of thing where we don't really... I mean, you can do it while you're standing in line at the grocery store, and certainly for me, sanctuary has been in the line at the grocery store on occasion if I really needed it. But it's a little nicer to do it, especially when we're first getting some experience in some conscious breathing exercises, to do it in our sanctuary, a place where we can be alone and explore our bodies and our minds and our psychology and everything about ourselves, coming to know ourselves a little more. So now I'd like to go right into a homework assignment that I'd like to give this week. And this is about personal private ceremonies. And this is one of my very favorite things that I like to do in sanctuary, is to take time to really, you know, go within and find out, like, for instance, maybe there's something that's been troubling me. Perhaps I have a fear. And I've gotten really practiced at watching my mind because I've been doing it for so long, but all of us can do the same thing. So, you know, maybe I'm typing at the computer and I'm thinking a thought, and all of a sudden a little death-defying fear creeps in. I think, oh my gosh, yeah. I'll usually try to catch that thought. I might write it down or find something that represents it out in nature, like maybe it's a gnarled-looking stick or something, or a broken leaf or whatever it is. And then I'll take either that written paragraph about the fear or that broken leaf or that stick into my sanctuary. And like I said, here at my home here, it's my healing room. And I have a nice cutting board that, you know, because my altar has lots of lovely things on it. We described in detail last week some of the things that are on my altar. And so I usually don't have the space on my altar to really, like, set out a little intention like that. So a lot of times I'll take this cutting board that we have and I'll set that down on the massage table. And then I might put a pretty little cloth on that and maybe a candle. And perhaps I'll hold a clear quartz crystal in one hand, perhaps in my right hand, which is my giving hand, and cradle it with my left hand underneath my right hand to kind of program that crystal to hold the intention. And crystals, you know, are amazing things. I mean, we use them for radios. They really can transmit energy. And they were my first teachers when I was first learning my psychic ability. I had gone into Dad's rock shop and got myself a rutilated quartz crystal ball, and that's the stone that's known for helping to develop psychic ability. And I would sit with that ball and hold it and feel vibrations coming from it. And I just happened to be sensitive that way. I can also short out computers and things. So, you know, some people have really hot hands where they're really good, you know, for healing hands, laying on of hands, or doing Reiki. And so in any case, I will usually take a clear quartz crystal and I'll sit with it. And I'd love for you to try this for your homework assignment today, sometime this week as well. And then let that, however you want to work with that, usually I use prayer, but sincerity, again, is the key. And so maybe I'll take a couple of nice and easy, relaxed breaths and really center myself. I might go into a meditation for a few moments and really try to clear my mind. I might ground myself or center myself. And then I'll go ahead and ask for assistance with that fear from my higher self or from the angelic kingdom or from whatever realm that I want to try to reach into to try to help me to overcome this fear. And that might be my own logical mind. I might sit down and say, well, logically, this doesn't make any sense, you know. And I might go ahead and write something out about that. Or I might do something with that leaf. I might draw a perfect leaf. Or I might see that the stick in its crooked nature is a part of the beauty of the world. Or whatever it is, I'll just go ahead and allow myself, and I'd love for you to do this too, to just find your own way in here for some sort of personal private ceremony. And it doesn't have to be a fear. It can be a request or something that you'd like to ask on behalf of somebody else or for healing that you might want to accomplish, either psychologically or physically or whatever it is. And then just allow yourself to, you know, look into the candlelight if you have a candle lit, or hold the crystal if you have a crystal, or write something out, that whatever it is, some sort of way to just let this be a sacred ceremony that where you call in what is holy to you and allow yourself to transform whatever those ideas or thoughts or fears or just allow yourself to stand in your true power and bring about the transformation. So that's the homework assignment.
Oh, that sounds really, really good. So about how much time do you think, Josephine, we should put aside for that?
Well, you know, it can be very quick. It can be as quick as a minute or two. I usually like to put aside about 15 minutes or maybe a half an hour or maybe even an hour, depending on how big the idea is that I'm working with. So any length of time will do.
Mm-hmm.
And so enjoy that one. That's a good one.
Well, I plan to.
Great. Then, as well, like I was speaking just a few minutes ago about my crystal, that's one of the things that we can do in our sanctuary. We can commune with the mineral kingdom. I enjoy that a lot. I have done a lot of communing with the mineral kingdom. Angelite or malachite or sodalite. There were times early on in my development of my psychic ability when I was going through that injury pattern where I had those major injuries for about 10 years where I would just lay down with this one big chunk of sodalite that I had gotten, and I had heard that sodalite was good for helping to develop the third eye, our clairvoyant center. And I would just lie down and put this big, it's a kind of a pyramidal-shaped rock, triangular-shaped rock, right on my forehead, and just lay there, and just take a nap or just allow it to be there. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that you really don't want somebody walking in and seeing you laying around with a rock on your head. But these things can be very, very helpful for us. You know, Carl Jung, who was the father of our modern psychology movement and such a brilliant man, he would go into active imaginations all the time. He had a little sanctuary, which was a very small house that was away from the main house that was down by the river. And he would go in there and have conversations with clouds and talk to rocks and carry on in all of these ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he came up with his teachings. Was from those explorations that he allowed himself to do, that he just gave himself the freedom to do. And, of course, kids do this all the time. They talk to imaginary friends. They know that all of their toys have voices, and they talk to each other, and they have a jolly good old time. And somehow we let go of that as we enter into adulthood, and we lose a lot of that right brain function. And so this is another way that we can really utilize our sanctuaries is by allowing ourselves to commune with, quote, inanimate objects. And then, as well, another thing that I have done quite extensively in my outdoor nature sanctuaries is communing with plants. And plants do have vast intelligence. They have a root system that is very akin to our brain. And they communicate with each other through chemical messages. They respond to their environments. They can actually change the shape of flowers and things like that depending on what's going on. The tobacco plant, if it's being over-pollinated by a particular moth that lays larvae on the leaves, and if the moths, the larvae, are eating too many of the leaves, the plant in a period of 6 or 7 days can transform from being a night-blooming, moth-attracting tobacco plant to being a day-blooming, long tubular flower that attracts hummingbirds and will no longer sustain moths and their long proboscises. They just can't quite reach in there to get the nectar. And so then the moths don't lay any more larvae, and the plant can survive better. So they respond to their environment. And then they also miraculously nurture their young. They can dole out the carbon molecules from their production of ATP in the leaves and sunlight and energy to their young underneath their branches. And though there may be other trees young growing under their branches, they selectively might not give those trees their same carbon molecules. And they've traced this by using radioactive carbon and putting a bag over a branch and submitting it to radioactive carbon in there so that they can follow where the plant distributes its carbon. So plants are remarkably sentient beings, and they are very like humans and other animals in the animal kingdom in their behavior, as I've just explained. And so that's another thing that I'll do in my sanctuary. And, you know, there again, you know, you don't really want people coming around when you're, like, holding the hand of a strawberry leaf, you know, and saying, so how are you today? And I've done many other things in my sanctuary. I've done, you know, reincarnation explorations. I've looked into my own past lives. And that's a wonderful thing for us to do because it, you know, it really helps us to you know, see what it is that might have, you know, caused us some anxieties in this life or might have created certain behavior patterns. It just helps us to expand our awareness. And we'll do a series of shows later in the year on reincarnation. So tune in because we'll be covering it in great detail. But I actually can see the clock here, and I know that you're about to say that it's just about to
Sorry, is this something you wanted to quickly squeeze in?
One last thing, which is our last slide. Which,
oh, certainly.
If you could. Thanks, Tony. You know me well.
I do. Is it possible to squeeze in a
one
little more?
Last
you
thing.
Will.
And so this slide says, I love this little saying, if you go within, you don't need to go without. And that's because we are our own greatest source of information for our lives. And when we look outside of ourselves, we're getting other people's opinions and ideas. And yes, that's all fine. We can weigh that. But really, we are our own best authority in our lives. So with that, I'll let you go ahead and wrap it up.
Thank you, Josephine. And that really is a profound piece of wisdom. And it was reminding me of what you'd said about Carl Jung. You know, the deeper he went within, the more he was actually able to go without,
yes,
in the sense of not do without, but
yeah,
actually reach more and more people.
Absolutely. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. So it's true. We are getting very near the end. So I'd just like to say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Simply click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page of Josephine's website. Again, it's stepintomagic.com, and you can send us your message. So, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for that, Tony. And in closing, I'd like to say how much I really appreciate sharing this unique and wonderful time that we explore together in this sanctuary of cyberspace. It really fills my heart with love and gratitude for all of you who are listening, and I can't thank you enough for enriching my life so completely with your presence. So thank you for giving me the gift of your time, and I'd like to finish with this little blessing. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love, and we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned, and so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you over the radio, and I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the importance of sanctuary and creating sacred space. This has been show number SA-1.14. And if you have enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next month when Josephine will be talking about sacred circles of women.
That'll be next week, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, that'll be next week, yes.
Yeah, very good. All right, well, Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.
Mm-hmm.